Remember the Chinese internet tycoon who promised to bring loads of jobs to the U.S.? He's reconsidered. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. It was January 2017 during a meeting with newly elected President Trump. Jack Ma, the founder of Chinese online retail giant Alibaba, pledged his company would bring 1 million jobs to the U.S. by 2022. Now Ma is dialing back the promise given current U.S.-China relations. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
At a two-day event bringing together Alibaba investors, Ma told the Chinese news website Xinhua that the promise, quote, was made on the premise of friendly U.S.-China partnership and rational trade relations. That premise no longer exists today, so our promise cannot be fulfilled, end quote. His statements come on the heels of the Trump administration imposing tariffs on $200 billion worth of imports from China, and the Chinese reacting with tariffs on about $60 billion worth of U.S. goods. Ma said these trade tensions between the United States and China could last for decades and would be, quote, a mess for all parties involved.
Andy, thank you. Let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.2%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all up about 0.1% or less. Stock in Tilray, the medical cannabis company, was subject to a kind of mania yesterday, trading more shares than Amazon in a day. One theory for the wildness, there aren't that many Tilray shares available. The stock closed up 38%. Every day you make decisions about your own personal economy, including choices that aren't obviously about money. That's why Marketplace covers business and finance from so many different angles, connecting the dots between complex issues and why they matter to you. Invest in Marketplace today to make sure public service journalism is always here to deliver reliable, objective news and context about the economic forces that affect you every day. Donate whatever amount is right for you at marketplace.org. And thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
10 years after the great financial crisis here, we're hearing teachable moments this week from the pair who pushed through Congress the big financial reform law that bears their name, former Congressman Barney Frank and former Senator Chris Dodd.
If you had ever tried to pass it a year before we did or a year after, it never would have happened. The window opened in that one moment, and you either have enough sense to go through the window and get as much as you can done, or it closes.
Today, let's zoom into the part of our conversation about efforts to tinker with the Dodd-Frank law. Some use the word overhaul. Now, this spring, in a bipartisan vote, Congress reduced the number of banks subject to the strictest federal supervision. Now, you measure a bank's size by listing its total assets in dollars. A small community bank might have $10 billion or less. Giant J.P. Morgan has trillions. After Congress's change, it's only the biggest banks with assets over $250 billion that operate under the toughest rules, stress tests and the like. Now, Mr. Frank told me he was, quote, unbothered when Congress modified his law.
The major thing that bill did was to relax the rules for the banks of $10 billion and under, which are the ones that are the real political crowd. And if you go back and look at what people like Senator Warren and others were afraid of, many of them were saying it wasn't just what was being done in that bill. They were afraid this was the beginning of a process of nibbling away.
And the thin end of the wedge is the
concern. Yeah, and it turned out that wasn't the case. Yeah. That was the total wedge. And that's what makes us feel more secure. That passage of that fairly small change was the last change that's going to happen. It changed the political dynamic. The Democratic senators who pushed for that now feel totally secure in not having to support any other change, and that there will be no further change.
Because the deal was community banks have, there's a lot of them, and they have political
power. Everybody's district.
And for the bill. But let me also mention to you that Jay Powell points out the Federal Reserve has maintained its jurisdiction for heightened supervision of lending institutions between 150 and 250.
They can pick them up.
And Jay Powell is not going to give that up. And so even though they did this in the bill, per se, the Federal Reserve maintains that ability.
But the result is that there was now no significant political pressure to weaken anything else. And with regard to the biggest banks, there was no change. There's no relaxation in the rules on derivatives, for example. No weakening of the Consumer Bureau legislation. So, no, I think what we now have is a confirmation that 90%+ of that law is going to remain on the book.
But you're not partial to the change, Mr. Frank, because you sit on a board of Signature Bank. That's a medium-sized bank. They might stand to
Yes, and in 2013, before I had ever heard of Signature Bank, Dan Tarullo, who was the best regulator, I thought, in the Federal Reserve, in a speech in Chicago, said that he thought the $50 billion was too low and should be raised to $100 billion. And he said he thought that banks that had less than $10 billion in assets should be exempt from the Volcker Rule. And again, before I'd ever heard of Signature Bank, I said publicly, how does that mean? I thought that was absolutely right. And so, yes, I then went on the board of a bank several years later that would have been affected by the $50 billion, but it had no effect on my position because I had said several years publicly before that and had written that I was for that change.
So the implication of my question is there a conflict of interest, you sitting on the board of Signature Bank?
Yeah, I want to say, one, I've been strongly for the tough regulation, but the best thing that happened to the bank, of which I am a board member in the past few years, was the Trump tax cut, which benefited that bank.
And you're opposed. You were opposed to the Trump tax cut.
I did as much as I could to oppose that tax cut. And that was the, you know, if I was going to be guided by the bank's financial interests, I would have been a supporter of the tax cut. Instead, I did whatever I could to urge people to vote against it.
While we're talking about careers here in 2018, Chris Dodd, you have joined a law firm that does consulting here?
Well, they're a large law firm. They do a lot more. There are a lot of practices, but financial services is one of the practices.
Yeah, and, so you're not
Arnold and Porter, since you've raised it, I'm not just going to say a firm. I want to give them proper attention here.
Arnold and Porter.
Arnold Porter is a great law firm going back years.
But you're going to use your position there to roll back Dodd-Frank?
No, of course not. In fact, they've been great. I've joined on amicus briefs and so forth, which support our legislation. And obviously, they don't have a huge client base that isn't necessarily in favor of Dodd-Frank, but that's not unique to that law firm or any law firm.
Now, you heard the reference to the Volcker Rule there. It's a part of Dodd-Frank often criticized as too complex that limits the ability of banks to make financial bets that could drag them down if the bets go bad. Get a manageable chunk of our in-depth conversation with Senator Dodd and Congressman Frank on the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed. We also have other ways to explore the biggest piece of financial legislation since the Great Depression. It's at Marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.